KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP, starting with job openings. The QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, and an environmental assistant. The Shimigan Corporation of Sandpoint is hiring a housekeeper and a bartender. The Adaga Tribe of King Cove is hiring a tribal administrator, a part-time or full-time IGAP assistant, and a solid waste recycling technician. The Belkoski Tribe of King Cove is looking for a part-time IGAP assistant, a full-time Belkoski Environmental Program assistant, and a part-time pull tab sales clerk. Eats is looking for a behavior health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They're also hiring a clinical information clerk for King Cove, a community health aide for False Pass and Nelson Lagoon, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. APIA is in need of a family advocate for Sandpoint, King Cove, and False Pass, and a cultural preservation specialist for Accutan. Community announcements. King Cove and Sandpoint, you have home games tonight. The Lady Eagles versus the Rookies in King Cove tonight at 6 o'clock, and the Eagles versus the T-Jacks here in Sandpoint at 7. You can tune into that live here on KSDP, or you can enjoy in person for free, courtesy of KSDP. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day. It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset, starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, today, northwest winds 15 knots, seas 3 feet. Tonight, variable winds 10 knots, seas 3 feet with fog. And Friday, southeast winds 20 knots, seas 5 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy, small craft advisory Friday. Today, variable winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet with fog. Tonight, southeast winds 20 knots, seas 3 feet. And Friday, northeast winds 30 knots, seas 7 feet with rain. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, gale warning tonight and Friday. Today, southeast winds 25 knots, seas 8 feet. Tonight, southeast winds 35 knots, seas 13 feet with rain. And Friday, east winds 40 knots, seas 18 feet with rain. Port Hyde and Nelson Lagoon, small craft advisory Friday. Today, variable winds 10 knots, seas 2 feet. Tonight, southeast winds 20 knots, seas 2 feet. And Friday, southeast winds 30 knots, seas 3 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, gale warning Friday. Today, southeast winds 25 knots, seas 3 feet. Tonight, southeast winds 30 knots, seas 6 feet. And Friday, southeast winds 35 knots, seas 6 feet with rain. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, mostly sunny with isolated snow showers in the morning, then partly cloudy with isolated rain and snow showers in the afternoon. Patchy freezing fog in the morning, patchy fog in the afternoon. Highs in the upper 30s to upper 40s, southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered rain showers and snow showers. Patchy fog, lows in the mid 20s to upper 30s, southeast winds 15 to 30 miles per hour. And Friday, patchy morning fog, partly sunny, then scattered rain and snow showers in the morning, then rain and snow in the afternoon. Snow accumulation can be up to an inch. Highs in the lower 30s to lower 40s. Southeast winds 20 to 35 miles per hour with gusts to 55. Your tide predictions for the Popoff Island. There was a low tide at 1:01 a.m. at 3 feet 6 inches. A high at 7:56 a.m. at 7 feet 8 inches. A low at 3:55 p.m. at 5 inches. And a high tonight at 11:01 at 4 feet 9 inches. Your sun rose at 9:25 this morning, and your sun will set at 6:27, giving us 9 hours and 3 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Coming up on KUCB News, the U.S. Coast Guard rescued a crewman aboard a cargo vessel near Unalaska yesterday. And a recent cluster of earthquakes near Unalaska is nothing to get shaken up about. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by GCI. Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Unalaska. GCI now offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and same pricing as Anchorage. More information at gci.com/internet.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. It's Thursday, February 6th, 2025. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk, with some local news from Unalaska. The U.S. Coast Guard removed a crew member from a Norwegian cargo vessel about 200 miles southwest of Unalaska yesterday. Norwegian rescue coordinators notified the Coast Guard of a sick crew member on board the Fermita around 7 o'clock Tuesday night. According to Coast Guard officials, the patient was showing signs of a stroke. A Jayhawk helicopter crew was sent yesterday morning to hoist the crew member from the roughly 650-foot vessel. Officials say they sent the rescue crew as soon as they could. The patient was then taken to Cold Bay, where they were transferred to a LifeMed flight to Anchorage. Scientists say a series of earthquakes that hit near Unalaska Tuesday are just normal activity for the region. You might have seen a social media post from the Alaska Earthquake Center about a cluster of earthquakes that struck roughly 100 miles southeast of Unalaska Tuesday. Elizabeth Nadine is a geologist for the center. She says the post was more of a reminder that they've got the Aleutians on their radar.
So we just posted to social media rather than each individual one. We said, you know, there's been about, it looks like five, just to the southeast of Unalaska in the past day.
Nadine says a magnitude 5 quake hit around 10:30 in the morning. That was followed by about 4 aftershocks that reached as high as a magnitude 4. She says the Earthquake Center probably wouldn't classify the event as a swarm.
To put that into perspective, if I look at, I'm just going to kind of look at the regional activity, let's say from Cold Bay on Alaska in the middle, kind of equal distance to the west of Unalaska, you've had between January 20th and today 60 earthquakes just in that region.
No one reported feeling the quakes on the center's database. Nadine says the larger events, like the magnitude 5 quake, hit fairly deep. That means they're less likely to be noticed at the surface. While the cluster is pretty normal for the region, Nadine says there has been some unusual activity across Alaska recently.
There was a magnitude 5.2 on the Iditarod-Nixon Fault west of McGrath. That's an unusual place in Alaska for an earthquake. Not unexpected, because there is a fault there. And then there was a magnitude 5 out in the Bering Strait west of Nome or near Little Diomede a couple days ago.
There was also a magnitude 4.3 quake that hit near Anchorage late Tuesday night. Nadine says there were about 2,000 felt reports for that event. While the quakes are unexpected, she says there's nothing too alarming about them because there is seismic activity in those areas. Nadine says Aleutians residents should expect more activity even if they can't feel it. The U.S. Geological Survey predicts a roughly 70% chance of aftershocks of magnitude 3 or greater in the area over the next week. For several years, the U.S. Coast Guard's emergency VHF radio system has experienced outages across Southeast and the Gulf of Alaska. There's been progress fixing the problem, but some mariners' distress calls are still falling through the cracks. As KMXT's Davis Hovey reports, another entity is helping to fill the communications void.
Mayday, mayday, mayday. This is the Defender. Defender, over.
That's an example of a distress call sent out from a boat in the Gulf of Alaska via VHF radio last year. But some of these calls are going unheard by the Coast Guard's towers in various areas of the Gulf, and specifically around Kodiak Island. That's mainly due to harsh weather conditions, aging equipment, and remote geographic areas where the communications infrastructure is set up. Since 2018, the Coast Guard has noted widespread VHF outages within its Rescue 21 Alaska system, which includes a dozen sites equipped with radio towers that allow the Coast Guard to monitor and respond to emergency calls from boaters across southeast Alaska, the Gulf, and areas around Kodiak Island. And gaps or recent degradation in the system can lead to potentially fatal incidents on the water.
And until we started installing equipment, we didn't necessarily know what calls were going unreceived or unmonitored.
That's Brian Hinderberger, the Chief Technical Officer for Marine Exchange of Alaska, a non-governmental agency based out of Juneau.
But we quickly started to realize that there were events occurring out there on the water that maybe the Coast Guard was not aware of.
The Marine Exchange of Alaska has been acting as a 24/7 middleman between mariners and the Coast Guard across Alaska's waters for multiple years. The nonprofit is currently working to expand its coverage and add more marine safety sites around the Gulf of Alaska and Southeast.
We started out targeting areas that we already knew the Coast Guard had deficiencies or experienced trouble in, so that we could kind of fill the gaps, so to speak. We aren't trying to replace Rescue 21. We're trying to supplement it and provide some additional redundancy to it.
The Coast Guard gave an updated report to Congress detailing the status of its Rescue 21 Alaska system back in the summer of 2023, after addressing outages at roughly a third of its VHF towers in Southeast from a few years prior. The Coast Guard Commandant at the time committed to upgrading the Rescue 21 Alaska system to reduce its VHF tower outages. And since then, the Coast Guard says it has made progress. Lieutenant Jake Carlton is the Chief of Security with Coast Guard District 17, which encompasses all of Alaska Line. He told KMXT in a phone call on January 28th that roughly the entire Rescue 21 Alaska network was working as of the end of last year. While the outages are less common than they were several years ago, there are still some instances where VHF calls are not getting through. Some of those gaps overlap with areas where the Marine Exchange maintains its own equipment around Kodiak Island, in places like Elbow Mountain, Pillar Mountain, and McCord Mountain. The organization also helps fill those gaps elsewhere with its own infrastructure, and it collects data from more than 160 marine safety sites, many of which can receive and transmit distress calls across the Alaska coastline. Hindenberger says their equipment is set up at higher elevations and at sea level, too, which makes it easier to maintain, and it prevents prolonged outages.
We don't just strictly install up on mountaintops, because we know mountaintops in Alaska are some of the harshest environments to operate and exist in, and it degrades equipment faster this time of the year when the weather is far more harsh than in the summer.
One incident when Marine Exchange heard a distress call that the Coast Guard did not receive via VHF was a search and rescue in Marmot Bay, north of the city of Kodiak, back in November. It ended positively after several attempts to contact the distressed boat, but Hindenberger says the result could have been much worse.
Based on the fact that the Coast Guard went back the next day to locate the vessel and it was no longer present, indicates that it either floated out to sea or sunk is what we're assuming to have happened. And if those three mariners were unable to have been extracted from that event, it very likely would have ended far more tragically.
According to a proposed timeline from the Coast Guard, the agency plans to replace all of its Rescue 21 Alaska base station radios by the end of fiscal year 2026. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
Tune in tomorrow at noon and 5 right here at KUCB for a new episode of the Bering Sea Barometer. Join your host, Captain Pete Nathan, for a taste of the real-life experiences of fishing the Bering Sea. Be sure to check out our other new series, too. It's called Amplifying the Aleutians. We interview longtime Channel 8 TV and KUCB alums for a glimpse into the history of the station and, by extension, Unalaska itself. Find all episodes of both shows on our website and on Spotify. Here's a look at what's happening in Unalaska this week. A week-long Unangam Tanu workshop is happening now, and there are lessons for all ages available. Call Anfisia at the Kamalungan Tribe for more info at 907-581-2920. The Fireside Writing Club meets at the public library tonight starting at 7. Share your poetry, spoken word, song lyrics, short fiction, or any creative work you've been crafting with a supportive community eager to provide feedback and inspiration. This club is open to all levels of writers ages 16 and up, regardless of experience. Dive-In Movie Night takes place at the Aquatics Center tomorrow starting at 6:30. Enjoy a movie on the big screen while swimming in the pool for just $5. Children who have not passed their swim test must be accompanied by an adult. Finally, the Valentine's Art Jam is happening at the Museum of the Aleutians Saturday starting at noon. Get creative making Valentine's cards while enjoying the sweet sounds of love songs over the radio. Crafting runs until 4, and radio DJ training with love song requests runs from 1 to 3. This event is a collaboration between KUCB and the Museum of the Aleutians. To learn more about these events and everything else coming up, check out your community calendar at kucb.org. That's the news from Unalaska. This is KUCB 89.7 FM. I'm your host, Andy Lusk. For more local coverage and community events, check out our website at kucb.org. Stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you Monday.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at madsen.com/Alaska. Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game will not be opening a new commercial fishery for Magister squid in Southeast Alaska yet. That's after the State Board of Fisheries voted on the proposal at its meeting in Ketchikan. KRBD's Jack Darrell has more.
Richard Yamada proposed the idea to the board. Yamada owns a sport fishing lodge near Juneau and helps lead the International Pacific Halibut Commission. He told the board that he's spent years investigating if there's a market for the squid.
It's the most abundant squid in Alaska waters, but very underutilized.
Yamada said there's a strong global demand for Magister squid. It's a staple of restaurant menus in Japan. But the biggest exporters of the squid are China and Russia. And Yamada said that due to geopolitical factors, those markets are on a downswing.
They're having a lack of squid right now. And there's an opportune time to Alaska to get into the squid market because of the economies and the lack of and high demand for a squid.
Yamada won a grant from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration a couple of years ago to look into making a market for Alaska's Magister squid. He said he's been testing the quality of his local squid catch on sushi chefs in Japan and Los Angeles. One of those chefs was Takeshi Suda, a sushi chef in Japan's Yamagata Prefecture. Yamada shared a letter from the chef saying that Alaska's squid's thickness, clean flavor, and consistent white color makes it good for serving raw as sashimi. Or the chef wrote, grilling or frying the tender leg meat. Magister squid are usually reddish-brown and can grow to over 2 feet long. They're native to the waters of the North Pacific, like around Japan, the Aleutian Islands, and Southeast Alaska. Yamada said they usually only live about 1 year. There used to be a pretty big Japanese trawl fishery for Magister squid in the Bering Sea in the Gulf of Alaska. Yamada said they were harvesting thousands of tons every year until the U.S. pushed the foreign fishermen out of federal waters in the late 1970s. Yamada claimed that opening up commercial squid harvests could provide another revenue stream for struggling commercial fishermen and cut down on the squid eating more prized catches like salmon and crab. Fish and Game Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang applauded Yamada's ingenuity, But he said without biological or catch data or any real idea of how many of these squids are in Southeast waters, the department can't really establish a sustainable management plan.
I think there's some fundamental questions. I think we can probably do something in a couple of years where we figure out that sustainability piece and also the market piece.
Board member Curtis Chamberlain also questioned the market itself, fearing a crash if China and Russia resume exports.
If you do it wrong, you can do a lot of long-term damage. There is a potential, but I really like this. So I'm a no, but we're not far away from something else.
Southeast dive fisherman Seth Rockwell spoke in support of Yamada's proposal. He said that opening up this fishery would create enough volume to start researching and gathering that data on how to manage it properly.
He's talking about a jig fishery, which is very low impact fishery, has very low chance of overharvest. And so opening up a jig fishery may expand this out just a little bit more to allow them to get more data, to allow this to move to the next step to be a viable fishery.
Board of Fisheries Chair Marit Carlson Van Dort says she's excited about the idea, even if she feels like it isn't quite ripe yet.
I think one of the elements that I would like to see presented perhaps in the future, because I don't know that I can support it at this time, but I'm really, really interested in this, is what the harvest need would be to sort of establish a market and production requirements and all the things.
Nearly every member of the board expressed excitement about the idea as a pleasant surprise and something they hope to hear more about during their next meeting on Southeast Alaska fisheries in 2028. The proposal failed 5-2. At the Board of Fisheries in Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Snow crabs started hitting Unalaska's docks again last month for the first time in nearly 3 years. As reported by KUCB's Maggie Nelson, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist Ethan Nichols says there are currently almost 10 vessels registered in the Bering Sea commercial fishery.
The fleet is just getting started for the most part. Fishing so far, the reports from the grounds, there seems to be good numbers of nice new shell large snow crab on the far northern portions of the grounds, similar to the last few snow crab fisheries we've had.
The fishery opened this fall after a two-year closure due to low stocks. The first delivery wasn't until mid-January. Alaska's snow crabs are historically fished in the new year and into the early spring. Nichols says, based on a handful of the first deliveries, the number of keepers per pod is somewhat low, but that should increase as the season progresses.
That's only coming from a handful of our first deliveries, and that includes, some prospecting by vessels early on in the season. It sounds like, from what we know so far, that the highest CPUEs are being seen on the northern portion of the grounds. And as vessels get more dialed in on those hot spots or those productive areas of fishing, they'll be coming in with, full loads of crab that are more reflective of the hot spots on the grounds.
Fishermen were allotted about 4.7 million pounds of snow crab this season. That's pretty low compared to historic catch limits. About 30% of that had been harvested by the end of January. Normally, some of that harvest would be processed in St. Paul, but this year everything is coming to Unalaska because Trident didn't open up their plant on the Pribilof Island, which is the only processor in the northern region. Nichols says it sounds like processing the extra crab in Unalaska is going smoothly. He says it's made some of their work at Fish and Game a little easier, too.
Just made our sampling a little bit more streamlined, really, in terms of just travel logistics this time of year. Not having to battle getting in and out of the Pribilofs with weather and flight availability and all of that. It's just simplified our sampling efforts.
Nichols says he expects to see a total of about 15 vessels participate in this year's fishery. Fish ticket prices are coming in at around $3 per pound. Meanwhile, there are 10 vessels registered for the Western Bering Sea Tanner crab fishery. About 10% of that total harvest has been caught so far. Crabbers have until the end of March to catch the Tanner crabs. And the Pacific cod fishery in state waters opened up as of the end of January. Nichols says he expects about 20 vessels to kick that off. They have a harvest of roughly 44 million pounds, which is just about the same as last year's catch limit.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council has been meeting to discuss new rules for limiting chum salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea pollock fishery. The Alaska Desk's and KUCB's Theo Greenlee reports that regulators have a lot to parse, including climate change impacts.
Western Alaska's chum salmon runs are in crisis, with some rivers seeing fish returns drop by more than 90% since 2020. For many Alaska Native communities, salmon is more than food. It's life. So tribal leaders and environmental groups have been urging tighter restrictions on how many salmon can be accidentally caught by pollock trawlers. But there's disagreement about whether new limits will help. Many industry representatives point to science that shows climate change is the main culprit for declining salmon populations, not bycatch. Jackie Boyer, her Chupik name is Apanajak, is an advocate with Salmon State, an Alaska-based nonprofit that works to protect salmon habitats.
You know, climate change is an issue, but that's something that we've got no control over. But what we do have control over is bycatch.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council regulates federally managed fisheries off Alaska's coasts. It's reviewing options, like closing certain fishing areas when Western Alaska salmon are at their peak, or closing the entire fishery when the fleet collectively hits a certain bycatch threshold, a so-called hard cap.
We can't paint in broad brush strokes.
Trent Artill is the Vice President of Fisheries and Sustainability at American Seafoods, the biggest company that fishes pollock in the Bering Sea. Like many people in the pollock industry, he's asking for a more nuanced approach.
We need to craft our approach to specifically addressing minimizing Western Alaska chum salmon, taking into account those times and areas of when they occur.
For the most part, the pollock industry has strongly pushed back against any type of restrictions. But subsistence communities in Western Alaska, especially in the Yukon-Kuskokwim River Delta, say that something needs to be done. Boyer with Salmon State says the trawl fleet can't continue to self-regulate.
There needs to be some level of a cap to keep the industry in check.
The council last took up the issue at their April 2024 meeting in Anchorage, which brought hundreds of written public comments and days of testimony from Western Alaska residents pleading for the council to act.
You just hear elders, you know, crying about, you know, not having traditional food, not having traditional practices, and so many concerns about, you know, their children and grandchildren not being able to know, you know, how to live traditional ways of life.
This time around, fishing, tribal, and environmental organizations, along with private citizens, submitted nearly 250 comments in advance of the meeting. The Fishery Council might not take any action on the issue this week, but input from the public, as well as presentations from the Council's Scientific Committee, will likely inform any new future rules. The pollock industry is the largest in the country and an economic driver for many Alaska coastal communities. According to federal data, the total number of chum the pollock fleet caught last year was down 94% from 2021. Fishing groups argue their voluntary changes led to that dramatic reduction. Industry boosters point to research that says more than half of the chum caught by Bering Sea pollock trawlers comes from hatcheries in Russia and Asia. And multiple federal, state, and local agencies that the council leans on for expertise back that up. The council's decision could affect not only subsistence salmon users, but also the long-term health of the multi-billion dollar pollock industry. Public testimony will begin at the council later this week. People can provide testimony at the Egan Center in Anchorage or online through the North Pacific Fishery Management Council's website. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
I was kissing your forehead. You gave a frown, so I kissed you again. You started waking and put your arms round my waist, just making sure I was there. Then you drifted away. Then you drifted away. And when I awoke, I found out I'd been dreaming. Some of my bedclothes were still on the floor. I looked around, realized you were leaving. I saw the back of your dress as you slipped through the door. As you slipped through the door. Kiss your eyes open, take off my clothes, and I'll lie by your side. Then I will wait till the Sandman has done with you. And as you sleepily rise, you'll find I'll be there. You'll find.
I'm
Take me now, baby, here as I am. Pull me close, try and understand. Desire is hunger, is the fire I breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed.
Because the night belongs.
What's that woman? Oh, spend on me. Let's clap along now. Come on. Can't you see? Make some racket. Can't you see? Sounding good. What's that woman? Oh, spend on me. Yeah. All right.
Can't you see?
Oh, Lord, she's such a crazy kind of lady.
What that woman?
Oh, spend on me. Go kick it out.
Aleutian Peninsula Broadcasting is generously supported by the City of Sandpoint. Sandpoint is a first-class city in the Aleutians East Borough, located on Humboldt Harbor on the northwestern Popoff Island. Anchorage is 575 nautical miles to the northeast. The Sandpoint City Council meets the second Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m. in the City Hall Council Chambers. Contact the City of Sandpoint by calling 907-383-2696, emailing sptcity@arctic.net or visiting their website at sandpointak.com.
You are listening to KSDP Radio, 830 AM, Sandpoint, 88.1 FM on Translator, K201DA, Kinkov, Alaska.